Let's welcome today's speaker, my friend Sandy. Come on.
Can I move it?
Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Sandy and I'm an alcoholic. And I want you to know I even wore my tall shoes because I'm really short and I'm still on my tiptoes. But that I don't have to read anything, so I don't have to wear these. Anyway, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm happy we're all in the right place today. It's very overwhelming for me. I get filled with inspiration, especially when people are taking birthdays and realize how fortunate they are that they stayed so they can share the message with all of us. You know, it's like, it's not luck. Luck is something you get in a poker game. You have to be fortunate to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we make a lot of jokes and we're very, you know, a lively, passionate group. But the point for me is, you know, it's a deadly, serious disease. And for me, it was so much all about being in denial. Okay, what it was like. I won't start at childbirth, but to just kind of quickly go through it. I'm a girl. No. Okay, no. Shit. I grew up in, I guess, what you would call today a very dysfunctional family. My father was married, I don't know, five times. I never knew my mother. That has nothing to do with anything. Because I never knew her, I never missed her. You get it? So don't feel sorry. I'm very grateful that in the state she was in, she didn't throw me under her arm and walk out the door. Because I am very great, you know, extremely grateful for the life and how I was raised, filled with love, a lot of different women loving me. Never had a mother figure. But I had a lot of people I admired that I was at an early age taught that to be self-reliant, to not rely on others. If you wanted something done, I mean, this is at 12. If you wanted something done, you better do it. If you don't know how to ask, there was none of this mamby-pamby, somebody handing me money. You know, it was like if I wanted a quarter, I had to pay it back. You know, there was no allowance, I had to take care of, you know, it's not Cinderella. For me, what it was real life experience. Life is not easy. If you're not prepared for it, you know, I'll never be prepared. I don't ever want to be prepared. Because I want to be able to take risks, be curious, be imaginative always. I don't want to be put in a box and be told, well, you can't do this either because you're drunk or you're old or whatever. So for me, I just grew up drinking. We were not allowed to have soda pop in the house. It was like, drink the beer because at least there's some vitamins in it. So, you know, I mean, it was like I would answer the door for my father and it would be, do you want a drink or a Broma seltzer? You know, it was just natural. Everybody drank. Everybody was happy. It didn't matter whether you had a penny or you had $100, you know, it did not matter. We were a community of happy, cooking, drinking, music-loving people. And I just thought that's the way of the world, and it was fine because back then, we didn't have all these consequences. So fast forward, although all of that, I didn't really drink, smoke cigarettes, or do anything until I was like 20 years old. Because I had to keep my shit together because nobody was keeping my shit together but me. So do I have trust issues, abandonment issues? I don't know. But what I do know is that I am 100% and confident that I was born an alcoholic. I had the gene and it was a mighty fine fun. I had so much fun when it was fun. And if I could do it still today, I would do it. But what happens, and this is all my opinion. If you don't like what you hear, there's a million meetings to go to. Read the book and all that stuff. This is strictly my opinion and how I feel, and that's all you're going to get. I'm not telling somebody else's story. I'm not impressed by other people's shit, be it shit or this. It's all shit because it's not mine. You know, I am not envious. I want to be my own person, and you get a lot of issues with that. But the point about it is, I have to be true to myself. You know, I have to have my personality. I did not get sober to be like you. I got sober to have a somewhat level playing field. So, okay, how did I get here? I don't have a canned pitch. You know, that's not how I roll. So I was in the music business in the 70s, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and it's all true. And a lot of meaningful one-night stands. It was perfect. Never stay at his house. Don't ever let the guy stay at your house, because then you'll never get rid of him. Go to his house. But it was safe then. I only had somebody put me in handcuffs once. And, you know, there weren't as many people on the road, so the driving drunk and all that, we didn't have AIDS, we didn't have all these effed up drugs that people put poison in to kill you. So, you know, it was like an easier, softer way of getting high and drinking all the time. So, you know, As I said, I didn't even know I was an alcoholic, I just thought it was normal. I kept waiting to outgrow it. You know, I swear to you, I mean, denial ran so deep. I mean, it never dawned on me. So, you know, stuff happens. You know, I drank just like you did, I'm sure. I don't need to go into the, you know, I've fallen asleep on my front porch. I lived on Burton Way. This is 19, whatever it was. The key, I could not get in the door. In a dress, asleep on my porch. Oh, that was fine. You know, I had no, I never guilted myself out. So that was, to me, still the fun days. But what happened as the wheels started to fall off the wagon was I was aging. And so what started out as being fun with all the party favors, so it was like the chicken or the egg. I don't know if it was the drugs. I don't know if it was the alcohol. Oh, so I gave up the drug. Only one drug, starts with a C. And then I became the sloppy drunk that was no longer 30. Now I was 40. And so that, it's not so cute when you do all this when you're in your 20s and you think it's really cute and everybody, you know, all that bullshit. But so I became... I became sloppy, and, you know, I'm not a sloppy person. And by the way, on the outside, everything looked just peachy keen, because from the day I was 15, I always had a job. I prided myself with being self-supporting. I was never going to rely on you or anyone, because that's like, you know, making your higher power your boyfriend. Please don't do that. Because once you lose your identity and take on his or her, whomever your partners are, you become very unattractive, you become very undesirable, you just become like the wallpaper because you don't have any identity. And I was never giving up my identity to anyone. But I felt the same way about I was never going to give up drinking either. So what happened, fast forward in the story that we can't follow. You know, I got sloppy with my drinking. In the meantime, I had a starter marriage at the age of 17. That primarily was to, I still, you know, had Velcro on my knees, didn't do any drugs, didn't do anything. I was like Susie Cream Cheese with a job, and now a hostage of a husband. But he was a very good man, and I loved his mother. So I know that's why I married him, because I never had his mother was the bomb, and but she spoiled him rotten, and he was just a pussy, and he probably still is. But anyway, that's why I didn't stay with him, you know? It's like, grow some balls. And what happened was, then I got to be single. You didn't have to be a virgin anymore back then, you know? So now I'd already been married, so I didn't have to be the, you know, Susie Cream Cheese with the Velcro on her knees. So I was single for about 8 years. It was really, really fun. My friend Sharon is here. She knew me then. Oh, my God. And boy, oh, boy. I got a greeting card that said, one more notch in your bedpost and you'll be sleeping in sawdust. That was quite right on. But in any event, I had a lot of fun. And we didn't, as I said, we didn't have the diseases. I, you know, it was cute. It was, I had a lot of fun. And if I could still do it, I would. But, you know, that, I've already got the Academy Awards. Let me just tell you. I've got the Academy Awards for drinking. I've got them. So it's like, next chapter. Man, I don't know where I am. I'm in a meeting. Okay, we did the hostage husband. Okay, so then I was it's really true. And he's a very good man, he's just boring. So I was single for 8 years. And in that 8 years, I relived my childhood. I did everything that I wanted to do. I had a lot of fun. Again, I always had a job. My bed was always made. I paid for my own shit, blah, 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 blah. So I was like, you know, you think you got it. So obviously, I have the spiritual hole that I don't know that I have, but I also know that I'm a spiritual person because I balance myself, you know, all, and it's not about the outside. I was blessed with a good outside, and I'm grateful for that most of the time. But it does allow you to prolong your drinking career if the outside doesn't fall to shit. But I am like one of those persons that would do it, you know, stay up all night and be at the gym at 7 a.m. reeking of alcohol, but I would be there. So it's like all this kind of stuff. I want to counterbalance. It was exhausting. I was done. So, you know, a friend of mine, okay, so, well, wait, we have a very good, important part in here. So at about age 27, I met a man. He was, you know, he partied just like I did. He was really fun, loved women, was respectful. I loved his family. I loved his mother. He was the youngest of four boys. He's still alive. Don't go there. Okay. His mother's not. But to make a long story short, I met this man who I really liked, but, you know, he wasn't my typical guy. And I must share this little short story as to what made me totally go head over heels is I was hemming and hawing about going out with him, and he says, well, you know, are you dating someone or what? And I said, you know, I've never gone out with a big guy before, you know. And that's a polite way of saying I think you're a little fat. So so his response was, once you go fat, you'll never go back. I was like, that's my man. First of all, he's confident. He's not going to try to control me. I have been married. I've been with this person since 1983. Okay? Amazing. Okay. He outgrew all the party stuff. Not me. So he had to put up with me. I would only say for about 2 years where I was really, you know, kind of skanky. You know what that means. And, because I thought I was having a nervous breakdown. This is really kind of running in a drunkalogue with what's going on and to tell you about me. I'm sorry if it's disjointed, but life is disjointed. The purpose of the exercise was I got really sloppy. That's when I gave up that big C, and I got really sloppy, and the alcohol, like the vodka bottle was super glued to my hand. I would be in the shower saying, I'm never drinking. You know, the next thing I know, I'd be on the phone. That's when the phone cords went all the way to the other room, you know? And thank God we didn't have pictures and phones and all that crap there. I would be... okay, so... I realized I had a problem because I was hearing things, seeing things, paralyzed with fear. And I thought, oh, I must have some medical issue. Could not be the drugs and alcohol. And then I thought, I'm having a nervous breakdown. So stubborn us alcoholics are. It never dawned on me. So, and I had a friend who had gotten sober back in 81, tried to get sober back in 81 for the first time, so I knew all about it, and she was in rehab, and I even carried an IBM Selectric typewriter to her so she could do her steps in the rehab, and then I proceeded to go across the street to the dealer, blah, blah, blah. Okay, had enough, paralyzed, hated myself, couldn't look in the mirror, I started going to meetings, never believed it was remotely possible. These people were lying. You're lying. There is no way. 2 weeks without a drink.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, much less a month, much less years, much less anything. It was all like, I was so resistant. I was so unwilling to not be able to figure it out, you know? So that's where the WE program comes in. So I went to the log cabin. Now, you know, you can't go to the log cabin without getting Mike White in your face. Mike White gave me my first big book. I want to tell you it was the last house on the block, and I want you to know how desperate. I drove him around for a year and a half. I stayed sober. And my first, and I got this from the log cabin, I don't have a bag of newcomer chips because I never identified. I would go in and just like stand there and anyway, I would just go, and but I also used it as an excuse as to where I was. It was my beard. I'm going to a meeting, honey. And I finally took the cotton out of my ears and left my opinions outside, and I surrendered because I was sick and tired of myself. And there was nothing to be afraid of. And what I realized was all I had to do was give up the drugs and alcohol, and then I could have anything I wanted. Anything. As long as I was willing. And as long as I was willing to admit that I was powerless over alcohol and all other mind-altering substances, that my life could change, that I would not be limited, that I would not have to live in a box because I don't like being told what to do. I take that back. I don't like being told what I can't do. It makes it a little different in my head. And that it's a disease of perception. And I was done. I was done. I was cooked. The wheels were coming off the wagon. I was on one wheel on that little red wagon. You can all see it. There was no way I was willing to give up my life and be a prisoner, because we are prisoners in our own bodies when we allow alcohol to rule our kingdom, you know? I wanted to feel that freedom. I wanted to be able, and my choices sucked, so I wanted to be able to have a part in what happens to me, in what my desires are. It was taking away my curiousness, my imagination, my desires, my let's get this done. I mean, somebody's gonna say you can't go because, you know, we don't know how you're gonna act. We don't know, you know, my husband would say, I don't know if I'm gonna come home to Lucy or I'm gonna come home to Dracula. You know, I'll tell you, recovery is a mind-altering experience. Recovery allows you the freedom of, see, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. If you don't try and you don't make a mistake, how are you gonna know? I don't wanna be, I cannot even emphasize how important it is to me to not be limited, to be able to go with my choices, to go with my dreams, to go with my desires, to go with my wants, to go with my don't wants. I don't want somebody making a decision for me because I'm too effed up, because I can't put, because, you know, it fries your brain. Anybody, and we all got a little, you know, we're missing a few little axles, it doesn't turn the right way. But, you know, I'm not a book thumper, but I love the book. What I love is it's such, no matter what the issue is, no matter what the problem is, it's generally based on my perception or me trying to control something. I want to be the director, the producer, the sound man, the microphone, the ding, 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 and everything is fine. You know, everything is fine. But you know what? That's not true anymore, because I am a very good delegator. But there is nothing I would not delegate to a sponsee, to my husband, to anybody that I love, that I am not willing to do, and I am willing to go to any length. To share this program, to bring positivity to people. Negative people are boring, and all they do, if you sit on that pity pot, that red ring around your ass is not a halo, you know? It's like, if you don't take responsibility, and, you know, I am on my soapbox up here. I'm now standing on my heels, to be called. The idea of being responsible is not a prison sentence. The idea of being responsible is if you are responsible in giving of yourself, your love, your time is your most valuable thing, and I'm not talking about counting days, but your precious time is the most valuable commodity you will ever have, I think. And it's, you know, I'm only 5'2", but, you know, I think I'm 7 feet and weigh 300 pounds, and I could, like, knock any guy down. But that is all, that is only my bravado. That is only my superwoman shield. Mush in here, mush. Mush, and I'm so lucky that I know that. And I'm so lucky that I gotten over, you know, I was told when I first got sober, I went to a psychiatrist or whatever, I went for help. You know, it says in the book, you know, seek outside help. You know, this is not, you know, a fix yourself joint. It's a place where you come to stop drinking and you learn how to live. And if you cannot open that toolbox that somebody else so graciously handed to you with suggestions, and you can't utilize the brains that God gave to you, because you all got them, believe me. You may not be able to find them every day, but we all have them. You know, we all have them. It's like the fear will cripple you. You may as well be back in the stone with the mafia where they put concrete on your feet and you cannot move for lack of not doing it perfect. There is no perfect. Perfection is boring. It is overrated. You know, unless you're cleaning my house, but no. Let me get that toothbrush out. But, you know, it's, and the other profound thing I find about Alcoholics Anonymous and all the 12-step programs is if you're lonely, if you don't feel that I'll never amount to anything, I just don't have a purpose, if you stay sober, you will always have a purpose. Every minute of the day, you can have a purpose. If you're one of those seat warmers in meetings, sorry, on the soapbox, if you're one of those seat warmers in meetings that let the original 15 people in every effing meeting do every commitment because you're too busy. Busy. Get off your ass. Be an example. I was discussing it with someone else. It's a resentment that I fight every day. And I don't have to shove it down, you know, everybody's throat. And, you know, how I stayed sober in the beginning was there was a man of many colors, Greg Lipari. And when I was 4 months sober, he dragged me into general service. And if you guys are feeling that not enough, I want you to go and talk to Rachel after the meeting, and I want you to volunteer to be a GSR. Try it. You won't get poisoned. What it will make you do is get in the middle of the pack. You will not be dangling your toe over and go, oh, I don't know. You know, is that the meeting where the da-da-da goes to? And if you don't like the meetings you go to, start a meeting. Stop blaming everybody else for your shit. You know, it's like, start a meeting. Go to another meeting. Stop relying on other people to fix you. You need to get your connection with your spiritual provider. Ha, how's that? With your spiritual provider, you know, God. I call the dog, you know, God spelled backwards. When I first got sober, I thought, you want me to quit drinking and you want me to believe in God the same day? Are you out of your mind? You know, this ain't happening. You know, and we suffer from not enough. We're the most narcissistic, insecure people we will ever, ever meet, ever. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like we can't give ourselves a break. I'm very critical of myself. I'm getting better, you know. My sobriety birthday, did I tell you this? My sobriety birthday is, geez Louise, October 9th, 1997. I had a little slip early on. And all I can tell you about that is it was very brief, it was very profound, and it left me no doubt whatsoever that there is nothing for me personally about drinking like a normal person. There is no one drink. There was never one drink. I can remember when I was 20-something, I was at the Roxy with Sharona over here, and I was like trying to monitor. Oh, and back then it was really disgusting. White wine spritzers, because they won't get you loaded, you know, right? But after the first drink, all bets are off. Then I'm on the phone for the dealer. Then I'm doing this. Then I'm doing that. Then I'm taking a hostage. Then I'm doing this, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, and sometimes I forgot and brought the guy home and couldn't get rid of him. You know, it happened. I mean, I was on an airplane going to visit the same Sharona in Denver. I don't know what year this was, 80, before 80. And I met a guy in the airplane. I mean, I brought him to her house. He spent the weekend. It's like, what the fuck? They would like look at me and go, whoa, we never know who she's going to show up with. I mean, I don't do that anymore. It was fun. Kid you not, it was so much fun. But the thing is, I did it. You know, I didn't die. I didn't kill anybody. Did I drive drunk? Yeah, but we didn't have so many cars on the road. And I would get to all the things, the birds in the morning, all those horrific things, you know. How's my time? Okay, so I have to tell you one quick story. It's very embarrassing, but I don't. You see, the thing is, I never had any guilt. I never had any shame. And so going forward, I don't want any guilt and I don't want any shame. And if I stay sober, I don't have to feel that way. I mean, it's such a spiritual program for a bunch of misfits. And I don't ever think about drinking. Maybe on occasion whenever, you know, it's like I have a normal life. I mean, I have a husband who drinks. We're in the wine club. We're in this club. He belongs to this. He did the thing and the golf and that beep-boppity-bop and all that. But, you know, he's not a drinker anymore. He used to keep a bottle of Chivas in his desk. He used to have that big Deering scale, you know, blah, blah, blah. But he's normal. But he's fun. He's passionate. He loves me. He loves women. Oh, women. Never liked women. Never, ever had female friends. Never, ever. Because, you know, women are smart. Sorry, guys. Men you can manipulate, especially if you're young and cute and all that, and we know the blood can't flow to two places at the same time, you know. So, that point being, I am honored, and it really, because, you know, because of my big bravado, everybody thinks, oh, she's got it together, bebop, bop. But I cannot tell you, today is one of the most remarkable examples of this program. I have women that drove here, women that have children, women that just got off airplanes, women that drove. It's Sunday morning. You know, beautiful, smart women with full lives that I would never, ever have had in my life. They know me. And I don't care, there was never a night, a drink, a guy that ever made me feel the way my girls do. Never. I mean, the gift of this program is just, there's so many. The gift of this program is the gift that keeps on giving. You know, all you have to do, the only step we have to do right or perfect is step one. It's the only thing in my entire 60 years that I have ever done, day after day, minute by minute. If you're telling me, if they would have just told me in the beginning, all you have to do is this one step perfectly, and then the world is your oyster. You can work as hard as you want, you can produce a film, you can have children, you can have a relationship, you can have a career, you can excel in your schooling of choice and be that magnificent inspiration for people. You can be an artist. You can be a mom. You can be a mom. I don't want to be a mom. I mean, I'm not a mom. My husband's my only child, and it works perfectly. And so, I mean, the gifts of this program, I'm sorry I didn't do the steps. I mean, I have all these notes, but, you know, I first of all, I could not be standing here if I didn't do them, because I wouldn't feel this way. I wouldn't have been touched by them. I wouldn't have believed them. There is a... thank you. There is a passage called Reaching Out, and basically, I don't know it for starters. I mean, for starters, from the whatever. I don't know it perfectly, whatever the word is. But the reaching out part is basically it says in there that you must forgive yourself for all the lies, unloving, unkind thoughts you have about yourself. Because until you do that, you will not be able... Anyway, sorry. I was trying not to say it. Damn it! Right to the end. Anyway, that's all. Thank you for listening. I can't wait to hear from you. Okay, do I read something?
Questions.
Okay. Green.
Yeah, hi. You said that your husband is a normie, right? Uh-huh. So what are some of the tools that you use when he goes to wine club or when you go to the wine club and you have to live in the world but not drink, not have cravings? Like, what are some of the tools that you use to...
The question is, How do I go along with my husband when he's at his wine tasting events? What are some of the things that I do to keep myself together? The answer for me is I didn't go for the first 2 years. I didn't have alcohol in the house for the first 2 years. I always have a drink of choice. And I carried a camera. I have to be busy. I always had a drink in my hand, tonic cranberry, and a camera. That was it. I hope that answered. Okay, who's going to raise their hand? Gregory.
Tell me what your experience with your first sponsees was like.
Gregory C. asked what my experience was, my first sponsees, what that was like. I was afraid to sponsor because I didn't think I had anything to share. I felt inadequate. I was still thinking that they were going to figure out I was a fraud because, you know, I felt that way for the first couple of years that, you know, you have to shed that remorseful thinking of yourself. I started by reading the book paragraph by paragraph with a guy who, you know, as he didn't stay sober. He just wanted to hang out with me is the bottom line. But the point being, it got me in the game because, you know, everybody needs this. I was a lousy sponsor, by the way. A sponsee. Lousy, lousy, lousy. So I did it by reading the book, by going through the book. I've since then, I mean, I have every format for a step. I mean, I'm very like that. I'm like, you know, I'm very organized and kind of articulate. We won't get into that. Okay. Next, you.
Sandy, it's wonderful to see you. I was the man on the airplane.
You could have been.
Hey, you were gonna say something and you said, oh, this is embarrassing, but then you got off. What was that embarrassing thing you were gonna tell us?
The embarrassing story, the gentleman asked who I met on the plane. The story was I went to the Daisy, it was a club in Beverly Hills with a bunch of girls, and to make a long story short, I woke up in the morning, butt naked on a bearskin rug, and I didn't know where the F I was. So I found my clothes, I went to this kitchen, found the address on a bill, had to call a cab. I was in Westlake Village from Beverly Hills, and I was supposed to be at work. So I got my clothes on, called a cab, of course didn't have any money, had to go into my office, no cell phones then, I was 2 hours late and get the money from my boss to pay the cab driver. Then in the clothes from the night before that were not frickin' corporate attire, work the whole day. Mike?
Yeah, hey Sammy, how do you deal with personalities in meetings? I know your answer to that, I know you, but how do you deal with AA personalities?
Mike White asked how I deal with AA personalities. The way I used to deal with them and the way I deal with them are different. In the beginning, I probably got in your face and said, you're an effing asshole and get away. Now I don't engage. And you had to hear my rant about people that don't participate in meetings, and sorry, but I don't engage, you know? I do not engage. It is not worth my oxygen. So go away. Somebody back here, come on. Okay, yes. Yes, please. The question is, do I still get cravings? I get over it. I mean, sorry. What I do is I have to get busy. What I generally do, because it's mostly caused by I'm angry about not getting what I want. It has nothing to do with the drink, but, you know, it might look glamorous, but that's not the point. If my computer crashes, I want to have a drink because I am powerless over that piece of shit. But what I do is I always have a thing of tasks that I hate to do that I don't want to do. I force myself to do what I don't want to do because I'm so angry I get to the bottom of the pile. If I'm in a social thing, I go outside and smoke. You, gentleman with the hat.
You would talk to us a little bit about your spiritual experience.
Thank you. The gentleman asks about my spiritual experience. I've always been spiritual. I just stuffed it down. I didn't think it was cool. My spiritual experience now is like, I call it taking my comfort. The moment I stop, and I can't really call it meditate because that gives it a title and there's nothing perfect about mine, but I know it. It is an inside thing that when I connect, I feel better. And when I connect on a daily basis, you don't even want to get around me. But no, the point being on a very serious side, that's my go-to. You know, I want to be a junkie with my experience, with my spiritual experience. And thank you for asking.
Sandy.
John.
Yeah. You talk about your sponsees. Is there a particular way that you deal with how you have your sponsees work the program? And do you stress service in that particular genre when you do that?
John asks how I communicate with my sponsees and do I stress service? Is there a certain way that I, you know, try to suggest the message? And the answer is I treat my sponsees the way I would like to be treated. Damn straight up. I listen. I put myself in their shoes. Then I find the answers in 12-step literature and I share it with them. If they want my opinion, I say, this is not your sponsee talking. And we just drag it around like a hot hound. But no, I am blessed because my sponsees are smart women. I mean, it's like, how did this happen? And it's because they're sober and they get to use every ounce of their being to be the best version of themselves. And thank you, John.
Last question.
You!
Danny, thank you so much. Quick question. What actions do you take when you feel like you have a resentment for construction?
The question is, how do I deal with resentments? Basically, how do I break them down so I don't have them, is the question. And, you know, that is like, you know, winning the lottery to get that one right. I really try to find compassion in the other person. I mean, I try. I try to realize they're having a bad day. It's like my other friend, you know, quit taking it personally. It's like the crux of our shit is that we take it personally. And then you say, well, how am I not supposed to take it personally? Because it's like, stop it. I mean, I do it. You know, it happens less frequently now. But I have to get moving in a positive direction. I hate it when people waste my time. Don't. I mean, my time is yours. But don't be respectful. It's not about me. I want you to treat other people better than you're treating me. You know, it's not really about, oh, it's about, don't you know better? You know, I want people to get every ounce of life and joy so they can make the room to be joyful. I don't have the luxury to have a resentment, and that's what I tell myself. I say, it's not about me, but God damn it, it is, you know? So thank you for the question. Are we pals?